There is a medrash in the beginning of this week's Sedra that says the following. Omer Belazer, Kama dios mishtabchos, kama kulmosim mishtabrim, kedei lichto b'nei ches asora pa'amim. The Torah is usually very concise, to the point, and yet in the parasha in the beginning of this week's Sedra, the Torah mentions B'nei Ches 10 times. Details very much what Avram said to them, what they said to him, back and forth, when it could have just said very simply that Avram bought Moris Machpelah from Ephron, instead of going through the entire give and take and mentioning B'nei Ches 10 times. So every time a Sefer Torah is written, how much ink is spilled to write B'nei Ches 10 times, and how many quills have been broken writing B'nei Ches 10 times over and over throughout history. And I think that's what the Medrash means. And the Medrash says, no, significant. Asora keneged aseres hadibros. The reason that B'nei Ches are mentioned 10 times is corresponds to the 10 commandments. Aseres hadibros. Lamedcha, and it teaches us a lesson. Shekol mishu mevarer mikcho shel tzadik. Anyone who clarifies the acquisition of a tzaddik, right? Here Avraham Avinu was acquiring Ma'aras HaMachpelah, right? He was buying something. Someone who clarifies the acquisition of a tzaddik, ke'ilu mekayim aseres hadibros. It's as if he fulfilled the aseres hadibros, the 10 commandments. And some have the girsa, not mevarer, to clarify, but mevarech, whoever blesses the acquisition of a tzaddik. So since B'nai Ches were involved in this acquisition, and they both clarified it and approved of it, blessed it, they are mentioned 10 times to show it's as if they fulfilled the 10 commandments. Now what does that mean? So I think the meaning of this medrash is the following. And it will give us a way of explaining a lot of details of this parsha, why the Torah in fact went into such detail to tell us how Moris HaMachpelah was purchased. I think the idea is the following. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created with Asora Mamoros, with 10 utterances, heaven and earth. But he created them separate. Bereishis bara Elokim es hashamayim, v'es haaretz, the heavens and the earth. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu descended and put his presence into this physical world to combine heaven and earth. But over the 10 generations till the flood, mankind threw God back, each generation another heaven up, until God was already in the highest of the 7 heavens and totally separated from the world. And then the Avos came, Avraham Avinu, and began to bring God back into the world. Avraham brought him down 1 heaven and all the way until Matan Torah. When the Torah was given and God gave the Aseres HaDibros on Har Sinai, it says, Vayered Hashem al Har Sinai, God descended, kibiyochol, onto Har Sinai. And at that point, the connection between heaven and earth was once again completed. That's when what God had originally planned in the beginning of the world came to fruition. And that is the Asora Ma'amoros. Asora Ma'amoros are the 10 utterances, Asora, 10, as opposed to the Aseres HaDibros. The Shem Yishmuel says Asora is 10 separate things. With the Asora Mamoros, God created 10 separate things, and heaven separately, earth separately, everything separate. The Aseres HaDibros, the word Aseres, combines them all into 1 unit of 10. And it is when God came to give the Aseres HaDibros, and we'll see the Aseres HaDibros themselves represent the connection between the physical and spiritual worlds. And once there's a connection between the physical and spiritual worlds, everything is united. Physically, everything is separate. It's only spiritually that the spiritual realm unites all the physical things in this world. And therefore, the Asara Mamoros are united with the Aseres HaDibros, the unit of ten that come from the Dibros that the Ribbono Shel Olam, and that's why Ma'amoros are just speech. It's ethereal. Dibros make it a dover, make it something concrete by uniting the spiritual and the physical together. Also, Ma'amoros are more soft, and Dibros are stronger because that gives it eternity. So the Aseres HaDibros concretize and give eternity to the Asara Ma'amoros and unite them together. Okay. And that's why God gave the Torah in the way, one of the reasons, why he gave as a preface the Aseres HaDibros and then the rest of the Torah. Because what's the purpose of Torah? Torah is there to tell you how to use the physical world properly, guiding it with spirituality. But first there has to be a connection between the physical world and the spiritual world, which was affected by the Aseres HaDibros, God's descending. And these ten things represent, each one, a different aspect of the connection between heaven and earth. We'll see how that works. And therefore, when a tzaddik buys something, acquires something, right? So he's acquiring a physical, material thing, right? It's a monetary, material acquisition. But the tzaddik is going to use that material thing for spiritual purposes. And the material aspect of that thing that he's acquiring becomes an extension of him. And he has reached a level of spirituality. So by buying a material, physical thing, the tzaddik attaches spirituality and materialism together. He attaches heaven and earth together. So therefore, someone who clarifies the acquisition of a tzaddik, someone who blesses the acquisition of a tzaddik, is as if he fulfills the Ten Commandments, because the whole purpose of the Aseres HaDibros was to connect heaven and earth, to connect the spiritual and physical worlds together. And when a tzaddik acquires a material acquisition, it's exactly what he's doing. So someone who clarifies that and blesses it and supports it is fulfilling the Ten Commandments. That's the import of the Ten Commandments. Now, specifically, where do we learn this from? From this acquisition. Because the acquisition of Ma'aris HaMachpelah represents all ten aspects of the Ten Commandments. And we'll see how that works. And that's why the Torah spent so much time telling us about it, because it wanted to clarify and let us know that when Avraham Avinu bought Ma'aris HaMachpelah, he in fact fulfilled and represented all the different aspects of what the Aseres HaDibros represent of the connection and the unifying of heaven and earth. And here's how it works. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Right? I am God, and not just I'm God, but I'm the God who took you out of Egypt, meaning that God has a connection to the physical world. There is divine providence. God is not up there, and we're down here, and God exists, but he has no connection to us, like the Goyim say. Rom al kol goyim Hashem al ha-shamayim kvodo. God's up there in the heavens, and we're down here, and the two never meet. No, God is very much involved in every single thing that happens in this physical world. That's the mitzvah of Anochi Hashem Elokecha, as the Rosh says, whoever does not believe in Asherot Seisicha Meretz Yisrael, that God has a divine providence, and he took us out of Egypt, and he's involved in everything in the world, basically his belief in God is irrelevant. Belief in a God who is totally detached from the world is not a belief at all. They have to go together. And therefore, the first of the Aseres HaDibros, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, is the foundation of the connection of heaven and earth. That God, who is in heaven, directs everything that's on earth. Okay? And that was represented in the buying of Ma'aris Machpelah in this parsha. How so? So the Ramban and the Ibn Ezra offer glimpses of why this parsha is so important. What do we learn from it? One of them says, we see from here that God fulfilled to Avraham Avinu what he promised him. He said, "Vagad l'shemecha, I'll make you great." And we see that the people of Ches bowed to him and they said to him, "Nesi Elokim, you're the prince of God amongst us." Avraham never referred to them in such glowing terms, only them to him. So you see that God fulfilled his word and he made Avraham Avinu very much exalted in the eyes of the people of the earth. And the Ibn Ezra adds, you see that God fulfilled his promise that he would give Eretz Yisrael to Avraham Avinu, at least a portion became his. So it's not the total promise, but you see that God is already fulfilling his word little by little, and therefore this acquisition represents this aspect of the Ten Commandments, that God is involved with the world, guides divine providence, insofar that Avraham Avinu was exalted as God promised, and that he got already a portion in Eretz Israel, as God promised he would, not the full amount, but already the beginning of the process. Next, what's the second of the Aseres HaDibros? Lo yiyeh lecho Elohim achirim al ponai. Not supposed to have other gods, meaning God doesn't need intermediaries. Once you have an intermediary, you again separate God from the world. Okay, God has connection to the world, but he doesn't have direct connection. He connects himself to the world through intermediaries, and you have to serve those intermediaries. Again, you have separated heaven and earth, so you're not allowed to do that. Don't separate heaven and earth. Okay, and that's why what's it called? This parsha represents that too. Why was Avraham Avinu so interested in buying Ma'aris HaMachpelah, just this place specifically? Because as the Rishonim, as the Chazal say, this place was the place where the souls leave this physical world and enter the spiritual world. This is the Shar HaShamayim for the dead. Just like the Beis HaMikdash is the Shar HaShamayim for the living, it's the gate that connects heaven and earth for the living, the Beis HaMikdash. Ma'aris HaMachpelah, it says that every soul who dies first goes through Ma'aris HaMachpelah before he goes into the spiritual world. It is the portal, the gateway to the spiritual world. And it only is the gateway to the spiritual world because it's in Eretz Yisrael. Because Eretz Yisrael is a connection between the physical and spiritual world, and the gateway to that connection is in Chevron, for the dead and in the Beis HaMikdash. Right, the Beis HaMikdash can't be built anywhere else. Neither could Chevron be anywhere else. That explains something the Ibn Ezra says, I think. The Ibn Ezra says that this parasha was written to tell us how special Eretz Yisrael is to the living and to the dead. Not only to live in Eretz Yisrael special, even to be buried in Eretz Yisrael special. How do we see that? Because Avraham went to such an expense and a bother to bury his wife in Eretz Yisrael. So the Ramban asks, I don't understand that. That would be true, that we could learn that from this parsha, if Sari Imenu died in Borough Park. The Ramban doesn't say that. And Avraham went to a tremendous expense to bring her body over to Eretz Yisrael and bury her here. And a bother and expense, then wow, he could have buried her in America and he took her to Eretz Yisrael. But she died in Eretz Yisrael. What was the big deal that he buried in Eretz Yisrael? The Ramban doesn't disagree with the Ibn Ezra that Eretz Yisrael is special for the dead, but you don't see it from here. She died here. You bury somebody where they died. But the way I'm explaining it is, but he went to a tremendous expense to bury her in Ma'aris HaMachpelah, which is the place where heaven and earth meet. Now, that, right, is only because it's in Eretz Yisrael. So from the fact that we see that Avraham Avinu was willing to spend so much money to bury her in this place where heaven and earth meet, the Ma'aris HaMachpelah, shows us that the whole of Eretz Yisrael is very special, because the Ma'aris HaMachpelah can't exist anywhere else except in Eretz Yisrael. Just like the Beis HaMikdash is very special, but it teaches us the greatness of all of Eretz Yisrael, because the Beis HaMikdash can't be anywhere else. that gateway to the heavens is a gateway, but it has to be in a place where that gateway can be, which means in Eretz Yisrael. So from indirectly we learn the greatness of Eretz Yisrael, both for the living and for the dead, from the fact that Avraham Avinu went to such a bother to bury her in what's it called in Ma'aris HaMachpelah, which happened to be in Eretz Yisrael. The Ibn Ezra in fact says himself that that's why the halachas of Nigei Batim, you know, the tzaras that affects a house, right, which is a special miraculous thing, only was in Eretz Yisrael, didn't apply in Chutz Laretz, because of the Beis HaMikdash. Since the Beis HaMikdash was in Eretz Yisrael, the whole of Eretz Yisrael is special. This is just the epitome, but it can't be unless there's something special about the rest of the land. You can't have a gateway to something that itself doesn't have any connection to that gateway. And therefore the same thing goes with the Ma'aris HaMachpelah. This is the gateway for souls. This is the gateway for living people. It can't be special unless the whole of Eretz Yisrael is special. It's only the epitome of where it is. But if where it is has no connection to that, you can't have the epitome, right? And therefore, the fact that Ma'aris HaMachpelah is the gateway for souls between heaven and earth, it shows that where it is in Eretz Yisrael is also special. Then there's the third of the Aseres HaDibros. So that's why this parsha represents this idea. No intermediaries. Eretz Yisrael is where God deals with the Jewish people directly. This is the place where souls and human beings, this is the gateway between heaven and earth. You don't need any intermediaries. Not the Beis HaMikdash, not for souls. So it represents the second of the Aseres HaDibros. Don't have any other gods. Don't have any intermediaries. Don't separate God from the world, heaven from earth, with go-betweens. Next, Lo Sisa. Don't take the name of God in vain. What does this have to do with buying Ma'aris HaMachpelah? There's a Rabbeinu Ephraim who says the following. One of the manifestations, expressions, of not taking God's name in vain is the following. Somebody who wears tefillin, tzitzis, and is a cheat, a liar. He's taking God's name in vain. Why? Because he, what's it called, dresses himself up with God's name, his tefillin, right? And people think, wow, this guy represents God, so I can trust him. And then he uses God's name in vain to gain people's trust and betrays the trust. So he's basically a faker, and he's using God's name in vain. That's an expression of using God's name in vain. Somebody who appears to be frum, and because he's frum, people trust him, and then he uses that trust and betrays it. Okay. So, Memela Avraham Avinu, what's it called, was a Nesi Elokim. The people looked up to him and they said, you're God's prince. You're God's representative. Now, if Avraham Avinu had cheated Ephron, if he had used that respect that he got, not on his own, he got respect because he's God's prince, he would have used that in a way that betrayed that trust, he would have been using God's name in vain. But Avraham Avinu lived up to that trust and he functioned in an exemplary way which brought covet to God, not used his name in vain. So we see from this parsha that Avraham Avinu didn't take advantage of these people. Just the opposite. He did everything kosher v'yosher, that he didn't take God's name in vain. He didn't take the fact that they exalted him and associated him with God and used that to betray them. So that's not taking God's name in vain. Next, the fourth. Zochar Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. Remember the Shabbos. Observe the Shabbos. Shabbos is a testimony that God created the world, but more than that. It's a testimony that God created the world in 6 days, but that's not the end. There's something more to this world than just the 6 days of the physical world. There's Shabbos. There's Olam Haba. God created the world in 6 days for the sake of Shabbos, which is a hint, an echo of the world to come. And that is the whole idea of burial. Why do we bury somebody? Burial is like planting the person's body. It decomposes, but we believe that it's going to once again sprout, just like when you plant a seed. It's not the end. This physical world is not the end. It's a means to reach an end, and the end is eternal. So therefore, we don't just throw people's bodies away or incinerate them after they die. because that would imply that's it, finished, you know, end of the line. But we plant them, we bury them, in order to show that one day they will sprout again. Right? There's a world to come. There's a resurrection of the dead. And that's why Avraham Avinu was so concerned about burying his wife. He didn't just dispose of her body. So therefore, the fourth Dibra, which represents the fact that there's a physical world and a spiritual world, and they go together. The physical world is not the end in itself, which is, again, this idea of connecting heaven and earth, right, is represented by the idea of burial. Next, honor your father and mother. So the idea of honoring a parent also connects heaven and earth. How? First of all, the person has three partners in his creation: father, mother, and the Ribbono Shel Olam. So it connects the three partners together by honoring your parents, right? Because that brings honor to God. You can't honor the partners that you can see. How do you honor the partner you can't see? Secondly, the idea of honoring a parent shows that you believe that the generation before is superior to you, and you have to respect it, right? That means the famous story with Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. If you didn't hear it, now you'll know it, so it'll be famous to you too. He was on a plane with a secular Israeli journalist. And Rabbi Yaakov had some of his sons and grandchildren with him on the plane, and they served him head and toe the entire flight. So this secular journalist turned to Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky and said, "I really envy you." So I have children also and grandchildren. They pretty much ignore me. They, at the best, you know, they send me a birthday present or whatever. But your grandchildren, your children, treat you like a god. They treat you like with such respect. So Rabbi Yaakov said, "What do you expect?" It really has to do with our philosophies of life, right? We believe that we emanate from the creation of God directly, Adam HaRishon. So my children look at me as one step closer to Adam HaRishon, one step closer to God's handiwork. So they respect me. But you believe that man evolved from the ape. So your children look at you as one step closer to an ape. Why should they respect you? If anything, you should respect them. So by honoring your parents, you believe that God created man, right? And the connection between heaven and earth, again. It also represents the idea, why do you honor a parent? Another idea is honoring a parent is respect for tradition. Because you have the Torah through the tradition handed down to you from the generation before. If not your parents directly, but their generation. And they got it from the generation before them. So honoring those that came before you is honoring tradition. All those things are connection of heaven and earth. God's revelation is passed on by tradition, honoring a parent. God, what's it called, created the world directly, created man. He didn't just evolve. Connection of heaven and earth, honoring a parent. Honoring the two partners you can see lends you to honor the partner that you can't see. There's the connection between heaven and earth in honoring a parent. And the Ramban says, one of the reasons that the Torah spent so much time speaking about Maris HaMachpelah is because there is a special thing of honoring Kever Avos, honoring your parents' burial place and going and visiting it, because this is an extension of honoring a parent even after their death. Because honoring a parent is not just for their sake, it's for the sake of these things we mentioned that even extends even after death. If it will only be for the parents' sake when they're not here, so what are they going to benefit from your honor? But if it's for bringing out the idea of Mesorah, the idea of recognizing the third partner, if it's for the idea of recognizing the fact that we came from God's creation, not from evolution, right, then all those things apply even after a parent's death. It's an inyan to continue respecting the parent even after death, even if the parent seemingly doesn't get anything from it. Okay, so that is the connection between Maris HaMachpelah and Kabedus Avich VeSimecha, and how that relates to the concept of the Ten Commandments of connecting heaven and earth. Then there's Lo Shirtzach. Okay, and in general, the two Luchos, represent this. We had one luach, which is more being Adam Lamakom, between man and God, these first commandments, and then there's the luach between man and man. And the honoring of a parent connects the two. So the two luchos were the same. They made a square between them. Each one was a rectangle. Together they were a square. So the two luchos represent Shamayim Va'aretz, the Medrash says. And we'll see other things, but that's what the idea is. Here's heaven, here's earth, they go together. Five things in the second five. What are the second five? Lo Sirtzach, don't murder. Why? Murder means man was created in God's image, and they're murdering a human being is destroying God's image. Right? That's Kedushas Haguf. That is something that, what's it called, that the holiness of the body itself, of the physical life, is holy. Because the body is the receptacle for the neshama. Therefore, we bury the body. Because the body is not just a bunch of chemicals. It was the receptacle for the neshama. And man was created in God's image. And therefore we treat the body with respect and we bury it. Another reason for burial. So the fact that Avram went to such bother to bury Sarah Imenu, didn't incinerate her body or whatever, shows the holiness of life. And therefore, what's it called? This parsha represents this of sixth of the Aseres HaDibros Lo Sirtzach, not to murder. Because even the body after death has holiness to it, surely when it's alive. And then Lo Sinath, don't commit adultery. What does that have to do? Not only is the body the body important after death, it's important in life too. How you bring more bodies into this world has to be done in a holy way, not in a profane way. So adultery brings more bodies into this world in a profane way, brings mamzerim into the world, right? People who are defiled. You have to bring bodies into this world and neshamas into this world in a hallowed way, because life is holy. So you have to bring life into this world in a holy way. And therefore, the parasha also hints to that, because Avram Avinu buried his wife. And it brings to mind the relationship between Avram Avinu and his wife, Taras HaMishpacha, the purity and holiness of a Jewish husband and wife relationship is also hinted to in this parasha. And that's represented by Lo Sinath, right? The fidelity of a husband and wife together, and how Avraham Avinu treated with respect his wife even after her death. So that represents this of this, the seventh of the Ten Commandments. Then the eighth, Lo Signov, don't steal. Why? Because not only is the body holy, because it's a receptacle of the soul, not only is that apply in death, it applies in life too, how you bring souls and bodies into this world, it also applies to a person's material possessions. Even what he attaches to himself becomes holy, and therefore you can't steal it. It's his, it's part of him. Just like you can't murder somebody, you can't steal their possessions. Stealing is considered like murder almost, because you take away a part of a person. What a person owns is an extension of him. The Telzer Rosh Yeshiva says the proof to that is that I'm a Yisrael, I can't eat truma. A Kohen can eat truma. But if a Kohen buys a non-Jewish slave, who then becomes quasi-Jewish, that slave can eat truma. Is he better than me? I'm a born Jew. This guy is somewhere in, you know, the twilight zone between Judaism and not, and he can eat truma. But the answer is that the donkey of a Kohen can eat truma too. Is that better than me? The answer is that the donkey and the slave are acquisitions of the Kohen. They become an extension of his being. So it's like another part of the Kohen eating truma. Just like his arm can benefit from the truma, his material possessions can benefit from the truma, because they're an extension of him. So not only is life holy, but even the extensions of life is holy, become part of the person, and therefore stealing is wrong. And therefore, we learn from this parsha that Avraham Avinu didn't cheat, steal. He paid 100% whatever was asked from him, because he respected the property of other people. That didn't take something that wasn't his. Next, the ninth, Losan Ebriach Eitshav, don't give false testimony. False testimony is also a separation between the physical and spiritual. How so? I use my speech, which is spiritual, right? Speech is the representation of the neshama, to hurt somebody physically, to hurt a physical person. So I'm taking the spiritual and harming the physical. That's also a separation of heaven and earth. Don't do that. And here also, Avraham Avinu asked the people around to testify, to be witnesses to the sale, and they were kosher witnesses. In other words, they corroborated what really was, used their speech to corroborate the physical world, not to destroy the physical world. And lastly, lo sachmod, don't covet. Okay, coveting is taking something by force if the person doesn't want to sell it. That's called coveting. In other words, I want something because it's somebody else's, and he doesn't want to give it up, but I like force him to give it up to me. Even if I pay him, I transgress the idea of coveting. Avraham Avinu didn't do that. Whenever Ephron willingly wanted, I can buy things from people. They can willingly give it up to me, right? Then that's not coveting. So Avraham Avinu made sure that he didn't force Ephron to give up this thing at all. He rightfully became the owner to it because Ephron wanted to sell it. And the whole idea of lo sachmod is predicated on the fact that everybody has their portion in this world that is designated by God. Again, the connection between heaven and earth. Everybody has their part to play in this world, and God is the one who designates it, and therefore I shouldn't be jealous of somebody else's part. It's not my part. But if that person wants to give up that thing and I want to buy it, then it can become my part. It can transfer. But not where it transfers, where I'm taking somebody else's part. Where somebody relinquishes his part, then I can take it over. So Avraham Avinu made sure that he didn't force Ephron to give up something that he really wanted, is still part of him, but he relinquished it, then Avraham Avinu took it over. It wasn't Ephron's part. If he wanted to relinquish it, then obviously having Maris HaMachpelah was not part of Ephron's props in this world. It belonged really to Avraham, and it was relinquished, therefore, It was the tenth of the Aseres HaDibros. So we see that each of the Aseres HaDibros, first of all, represents this idea of connection of heaven and earth, and it is represented and expressed through the sale of Maris HaMachpelah. And that's why we learn marriage from this parasha. How do you affect a marriage? One of the ways of affecting a marriage is taking a woman. The Torah just says, ki yikach ishisha. A man will take a woman. Now maybe it means he takes a club, bites her over the head, and pulls her by the hair into his cave. Right? How do you know how you take a woman? So the Torah says, I'll tell you how. I'm going to use the same terminology of kicha in the parasha of Ephron. Kesef hasode kach mimeni. The money for the field take from me. And I want you to learn when it says ki yikach ishisha from this taking, just like over here the taking is money, over here the taking is with money. Why did the Torah choose to teach me the laws of marriage from Maris HaMachpelah? But that's what marriage is. Marriage is the connection of heaven and earth. It says that the luchos, the two luchos of the Ten Commandments, one represents man, one represents woman. Just like one represents heaven and one represents earth, one represents man and woman. Why? Because the connection of man and woman is connecting heaven and earth. A woman's role is more to create the home in this world, to bring the Torah into the physical world, and the man is more to get the abstract ideas of the heavens. And he brings down the Torah from the heavens, the halachas, and he learns Torah, and he gives it to the woman, and she applies it to earth. So man and wife is ish v'isha shchina shriya b'neim. Where does God's presence come into the world between a husband and wife? The husband has the yud, ish. The wife has the hay. The world to come was created with a yud. That's a spiritual world. This world was created with a hay. B'hi baram. God created this world with a hay. So the woman has this world, the man has the spiritual world. They connect them through marriage, through husband and wife. So the place where the Torah represented marriage is this, where Avraham Avinu bought Maris HaMachpelah. Basically, it represents the connection of heaven and earth. It connects through it represents the Ten Commandments, which is the connection of heaven and earth, Mamela Kedushin, which is the connection of heaven and earth in a very individual way, because that's where God's presence is between husband and wife, we learn from this parasha of Maris HaMachpelah. And that's why it says, Vayokum stay Ephron. Rashi says that when Avram Avinu bought the field, it was elevated. It was elevated because now it became connected, again, heaven and earth became connected through Avram Avinu's acquisition. And that's what it says. Whoever clarifies or blesses, supports the acquisition of a tzaddik is basically fulfilling the Ten Commandments, because it has within it, especially this specific acquisition, all the aspects of what the Ten Commandments represent, which ultimately is the connection of heaven and earth, the spiritual and the physical, from all different perspectives. So if we strengthen ourselves in this idea and see to it that we don't separate the spiritual side of life and the physical side of life, but we connect them and they go together in total synchronization in every aspect, right, through Torah learning and through Shmiras HaMitzvahs, then we will have achieved what the Rabban Shalom intended for this world, not to be Asara Mamoros, 10 disjointed, detached physical creations where heaven and earth are separate, but to combine them together and to take from this physical world to create the eternity of the spiritual world. Yes.
Okay. So the part that I don't understand, heaven and earth meet. Why again was it so important for her to be very great there? Because that was, what does that mean?
That's there. Just like there's a physical world, a spiritual world.
Right.
The physical and spiritual world have correspond to each other. Just like there's a physical place, there's a spiritual counterpart to that physical place, which is a spiritual entity. The physical place that is corresponds to the spiritual gateway to the heavens is by Maris HaMachpelah. Just like the spiritual place or the physical place that corresponds to the spiritual gateway to the heavens for sacrifices, for prayer, whatever is the Beis HaMikdash, this is the place for souls to ascend from this world to the next world. Right, the Beis HaMikdash is a place for prayers, sacrifices to ascend, but there has to be a gateway, a place where the two meet. Right, and that gateway is in the Beis HaMikdash, but basically it's in all of Eretz Yisrael, but this is the gateway. In other words, if you have a doorway, the doorway is meaningless unless there's a house around it. So what the doorway is, this doorway connects this house with what's on the other side. Right, so then the house is also important, because you can't have a doorway without a house. So the gateway of souls and tefillah is, both of them are in Eretz Yisrael, the Beis HaMikdash and Maris HaMachpelah. So it shows the importance of Eretz Yisrael too. But it's the physical counterpart of that spiritual place. Spiritual isn't in place, it's a dimension. But that spiritual dimension is connected to this physical place.
So would you say that it's better for all of us after 120 years to be buried in Hebron, but anywhere in
Eretz Yisrael, right.
Yes.
It's not, so that was special for souls that that are on a very high level. Right? And there was only a certain place, only certain people could be buried there. Right? Too supercharged for the bodies of regular people. Okay? It's like plugging in a 110 appliance into 220. You know what happens. So, but every soul, wherever they're buried, but if they're buried in Israel, even more, pass through there before they go to the heavens. Before they go to that a dimension. They don't go up or anywhere, they just go to a dimension.
It's not like, Kutzlaris, where you once
right, right. You have to roll, right.
Yeah,
right.
But we don't have to
No. Not at all. Since this is the epitome, but it only could be in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael has that same quality to a certain degree. In Chutz Laaretz doesn't have that quality at all. Maris HaMachpelah could not have been in Chutz Laaretz. Yeah.
Lamala
and Lamata, Hebron, Lamala, Lamata, same thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. And probably
another student. Right. Right. In other words, there's always a spiritual counterpart to every physical thing. So the spiritual counterpart to Hebron is that Chibur. That's what Hebron means. Chibur. The connection, the physical doorway is this cave. And the spiritual counterpart is the upper Hebron. Yeah.
So on the same lines, I got kind of confused this week when we heard about this because I've heard also that the Kedar Hashem is the place where this world connects to, like, the Shekhinah concept.
Right.
So how is that?
I don't know if the Shekhinah, again, this is, what I understand is, because the Beis HaMikdash is like that.
Right.
The Beis HaMikdash is for the living. In other words, the connections while you're in this world, that's the connection. And the Maris HaMachpelah is the connection for the dead. Right? You don't bury people in the Beis HaMikdash. In fact, you're not allowed to bury people in Yerushalayim. Just the opposite. On the other hand, you don't make korbanos in Hebron.
Right? You're not
well, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, that's within the walls. Right, not allowed to have, except for David HaMelech, what's it called, the Kivrei David, the sons of David are allowed to be buried in that area, but beyond that, you don't, you're not allowed to have a funeral, you're not allowed to have, that's why Har HaZeisim is outside the city. Outside the city, you know, the hallowed city. That, well, not exactly, but it's close. It's what that used to be was down where all those Arab homes are, Ir David. That was the old city right there.
Before the
right.
That was the original.
Right.
So this idea was Lamala Lamata. That's just Eretz Yisrael. That's
To a certain degree, it applies everywhere. There's always a spiritual counterpart to everything that's physical, but not to the level it's in Eretz Yisrael.
I've got a
cavity.
That was something. You don't do physically go and take somebody's house by force. It's just going every day past somebody's house and you say, I wish that house was mine.
Right. You're not allowed to do that either, but you don't transgress it where you have the complete transgression unless you really go out of your way to get it, even if you pay for it, mm-hmm. but you want it and you get it. Then you really wanted it. No, you just see that the tremendous respect between a husband and wife.
But in another business deal at the time, that cow would.
What?
But in another.
No. When you clarify the acquisition of a tzaddik, in general, it has the concept of the Aseret HaDibros. But this one has all the aspects within it in specific.